Hello, everyone. As you all may know, Gurudeva Paramahansa Yogananda used to start his talks by asking the devotees, "How feels everyone?" Actually, I was going to ask you to answer Master directly, but you did it. And you know, you have also demonstrated how it is to live with the positive and joyful attitude, which is the subject of today's talk. You answered Master as if you were ready to conquer the world, and conquer the world you will have to, only too soon when you go back to your daily life. So take with you these words of his: "I shall go forth with the courage of a hero and the smile of a conqueror." After having gathered so many gems of spiritual inspiration from Guruji's teachings this week, whether you realize it or not, each one of you is a different person. A better person, a more spiritual person. Because when we get in touch with truth, in a subtle way, we are affected, purified, uplifted. Gurudeva promised us, "Whoever comes to me in the right spirit, with devotion for God, will never be the same again." You may not be aware of your change, but others see it, and most important, God and Guru see it. When we meet with you again after some time, we notice how you have changed, how you have grown, because every little effort you make in self-improvement, in meditation, in loving God is propelling you toward that supreme, ever-new joy we are all seeking. As the Sufi mystic Hafiz said, "What is this precious love and laughter budding in our hearts? It is the sound of a soul waking up." And thanks to Guruji's descent to earth, we can say it is the sound of thousands of souls waking up. This thought certainly thrills us with great joy, and when we see you grow, it's like witnessing a lovely tribute to the Guru, to his teachings, and to your own personal efforts too. Guruji gave us so much wise and deep counsel that, if taken to heart, can really transform our life. Now, what is of interest to all of us is anything related to the science of Kriya Yoga and the liberating meditation techniques, and you have delved into that throughout the week. So I will just bring up a few thoughts, in the hope that they will help you hold on to what you have gained this week, and also to live more and more with a positive and joyful spirit. Here is a powerful one. Guruji says, essentially, conditions are neither good nor bad. They are always neutral, seeming to be either depressing or encouraging, because of the sad or bright attitude of the mind of the individual concerned with them. Quite interesting, isn't it? If we were to really ponder, absorb with our atoms these few words, "conditions are always neutral," we could dramatically transform our life. Such a thought sheds a new light on the way we see our own personal experiences, and life in general. We know that two people may go in through the same experience, and one becomes embittered while the other grows in wisdom and understanding. Now, this doesn't mean that we should all be Pollyannas. No. There are times in life when we have to face sorrow, the loss of a loved one, a serious illness, and all the spiritual, as well physical and mental tests that we have to go through. But this is the lot of all human beings. Our Guru says, if man rises above circumstances by the heroic courage that is in him, all conditions of life, however dark and threatening, will be like a blanket of mist that will disappear with the warm glance of the sun. So it is vital to our happiness to cultivate that bright attitude of the mind, as Master says, and make it a habit to see the glass half full rather than half empty. Let me tell you a little story shared by a nurse. One day, a 92-year-old lady went to a nursing home because she was moved, her husband died, and so she had to live there. And she was asked to wait for many hours in the lobby. Now, this would have irritated, I would say, 90% of us here. Yet, the nurse said, as Mrs. Jones maneuvered her walker to the elevator, I provided a visual description of her tiny room. I love it, she stated, with the enthusiasm of an 8-year-old having just been presented with a new puppy. Mrs. Jones, you haven't seen the room, just wait. Oh, it doesn't have anything to do with it, she replied. Happiness is something you decide on ahead of time. Whether I like my room or not doesn't depend on how the furniture is arranged. It's how I arrange my mind. I have a choice. I already decided to love it. What a person. I wonder how many people this lady has helped just by expressing her determination to love it. We too, when facing challenges, could remind ourselves that we have control over how we are going to react, how we are going to arrange our mind. Are we going to become embittered? Are we going to be angry? Are we going to be resentful? Or are we going to allow ourselves to grow in wisdom and understanding? Take a look at the life of Nelson Mandela. He spent 27 years in prison, and toward the end of his prison term, he wrote a letter that revealed the high ideals that made him the man he is. This is just a passage, but listen to it. In judging our progress as individuals, we tend to concentrate on external factors such as one's social position, influence and popularity, wealth and standard of education. But internal factors may be even more crucial in assessing one's development as a human being. Honesty, sincerity, simplicity, humility, purity, generosity, absence of vanity, readiness to serve your fellow man, qualities within the reach of every soul, qualities, I would add, that bring true inner joy. And Mandela's example his forgiveness of his jailers, his refusal to blame or seek revenge inspired the entire world. You see, the stage props, the actors, are placed around us for our own benefit by the supreme director of this cosmic entertainment. And what we do with all of that is simply up to us. So every time you're inclined to react to conditions, ask yourself, am I remembering that essentially conditions are neither good nor bad, that they are always neutral, that it is my reaction that can make them sad or bright? We get to choose. Such power is ours. We don't need to be victimized by circumstances. We choose how we are going to react. Easy? No. Rewarding? Yes. Another way to sustain a positive and joyful attitude is to have a sense of humor. To not to take our life so seriously, and to just be able to laugh. Gurudeva says, whatever comes in life, just take it joyfully, impersonally, as you would a motion picture. Life is entertaining when we do not take it too seriously. A good laugh is an excellent remedy for all human ills. I remember once I was asked to coordinate a major event, and I had very little information to go by, so I was working long hours into the night. And one afternoon, I decided to take a little walk outside. One of the sisters joined me, and we started talking. Referring to my predicament, I said, if I go on like this, I'm going to die young. This sister stopped in her tracks, looked at me very concerned, very, very seriously, and she said, die young? Honey, you are too late. I laughed too. And I can guarantee you it was an excellent remedy, a real relief. This sister, I heard her once say to someone, dear, enjoy suffering as long as you can. You'll have joy for eternity. Don't you agree that it's so freeing to be able not to take life too seriously, and how relieving it is, how relaxing it is to laugh about ourselves? Let's see, another component of creating a more joyful life is to watch our thoughts and maybe do a little editing. Remember how Sri Yukteswarji said, examine your thoughts unremittingly for 24 hours, then wonder no longer at God's absence. Well, here is the good news. If we start replacing our not-so-divine thoughts with more divine thoughts, and just try to do this on a permanent basis, we will start wondering at God's presence instead of his absence. Listen to this loving, simple counsel Guruji gave us. Think of your mind as a garden and keep it beautiful and fragrant with divine thoughts. Now, I believe many of you have a patch of earth and like to do gardening. Would any of you purposely ever plant a stinky weeds in your garden? You wouldn't. I see an awful lot of no's. So it is with the mind. Master tells us, joy lies in continually thinking of God. A time comes when your mind never wanders away, when not even the greatest affliction of body, mind, and soul can take your consciousness from the living presence of God. Is that not wonderful, to live and think and feel God all the time? Yes, Master, it is wonderful. Let's see what else we can do to bring joy in our life. Well, here is a key: to remind ourselves of the truth that we are joy itself. We are an inseparable part of joy itself. That's our true nature. That's what we are. We are nothing but little particles of God's infinite body, tiny sparks of His life and consciousness. Think of it. Remember what it says in the Upanishads: from joy I've come, for joy I live, and into that sacred joy I will one day melt again. The trouble is that most people look for joy outside of themselves. And we know that the world can offer very fleeting, evanescent joy. It's a constant going up and down on the waves of change and emotion, of likes and dislikes, in short, of duality. But Master is asking us, why not seek joy directly? And he's also telling us, you crave joy that is not merely tantalizing, disappearing like a sudden flicker of gossamer wings beneath a flash of lightning. You should look for joy that will shine forever steadily like the ever-luminous radium. That beautiful joy is who we truly are. We bring that consciousness with us when we come to Earth from the astral plane. Let me tell you a little story that relates to that. A devotee has two children, and when this incident occurred, the little boy, Andrew, was about 4 years old, and the baby girl, about 6 months old. Andrew loved his baby sister, and before retiring every night, he would go to her crib and arrange just a little blanket and caress her forehead and talk to her. One night, the parents were just outside of the door watching Andrew, and they heard him implore his little sister, "Please, please, tell me about God. I'm starting to forget." You see, during the first years that we are on Earth, we are still connected with the astral plane. And we can remember somehow what we lived in that beautiful realm. Little children and saints can perceive the astral world while on Earth because they both are pure. Little children have just come from there, and saints, well, they have easy access to those realms. I remember once I had to go into Dayamataji's room very early in the morning, and I didn't want to disturb her, so I just tiptoed very quietly. And as I went further into the room, she opened her eyes, and with a faraway look, she said, "Oh, that's you. Sometimes I don't know if I am in this world or in the other." And then, as if she were talking to herself, she said, "Oh, I was walking with Lahiri Mahashaya," and then closed her eyes again. Children and saints, and all of us are on our way. Day by day, we too, in our hearts and mind, can lift ourselves up, can choose to walk hand in hand with Lahiri Mahashaya, with our Divine Guru, with our great masters, until we are continuously aware of this beautiful realm that has become so much part of us. Let me tell you another little story about Daya Mataji. I've always been so, what shall I say, enchanted by her ardent love for God and tremendous compassion for human beings. And because she takes compliments very impersonally, I felt free to express myself with her. So one day I met her in the hallway, and just looking at her, I exclaimed spontaneously, "Oh my, you're so wonderful." And she smiled and turned to me with the sweetest expression, and she said, "Divine Mother loves Divine Mother." Imagine living with the consciousness that Divine Mother, God, and Guru share your every moment. What joy such a state of consciousness brings. All great ones have reached that state of consciousness wherein they see the Divine Beloved everywhere, in everything, in everyone. Now let's take a look at a little obstacle that may be keeping us from bringing more joy into our life. You will remember that a few months after Guruji entered Sri Yukteswar Ashram, he suddenly decided to go find God in the Himalayas. And after quite an adventurous trip, he returned to his guru and crestfallen said, "Master, I must have disappointed you by my abrupt departure from my duties here. I thought you might be angry with me." And what did that great sage respond? "No, of course not. Wrath springs only from thwarted desires. I do not expect anything from others, so their actions cannot be in opposition to wishes of mine. I would not use you for my own ends. I am happy only in your own true happiness." What love, what wisdom, and a lot of food for thought for us. Can you guess what the key word is in here? Desire. Wrath springs only from thwarted desires. Just if we analyze ourselves and our motives, we will see that there is hardly any move we make towards something or someone that is not compelled by a desire. It may not be obvious to us, we may not be aware of it, but it is there. It may be very subtle, but it is there. Just observe yourselves closely. Question yourselves. You may find that desires are basically running your life. There are tricky things, these desires. Listen to this. Master said, "If a devotee were to exercise rigorous austerity and penance for 1,000 years, if he were to crush his body with a rock, or enter a burning pyre, or throw himself in a hole full of nails, he would not attain salvation. unless he freed himself from desires. Quite powerful statement, isn't it? Guruji makes it very clear how important it is for us to start letting go of those desires that enslave us. And perhaps we all should consider going on a desire reduction diet together. Actually, that could be very rewarding, because Guruji also says, when the spirit of man mentally renounces desire for the objects of this world, he begins to find true joy and satisfying soul qualities. The plan is obvious. We need to transmute the worldly desires so that there is more space within us for joy and satisfying soul qualities. The other powerful thought Sri Yukteswar expressed here to Guruji was, I do not expect anything from others, so their actions cannot be in opposition to wishes of mine. Could any of us truly say the same? We do not expect anything from others? Your spouse? Your children? You don't expect anything from them? Your parents? Your siblings? Your friends? It calls for a little introspection tonight. If we try to apply this not to expect anything from others, we'll be amazed to see how such an attitude will take us to a much more positive, relaxed, and joyful life. Whenever I've tried, has really always worked, and I highly recommend it, because if we don't expect anything from others, we remain neutral. So we are not hurt, disappointed, discouraged. Nice. At the Hermitage of Sri Yukteswar, Guruji told us, they used to sing a chant, which, by the way, is on the Cosmic Chants book. It starts with the devotee recognizing the power of desire and crying out loud, desire, my great enemy, with his soldiers surrounded me, is giving me lots of trouble, oh my Lord. And then the devotee determines, that enemy I will deceive, remaining in the castle of peace. Because that's the way to gain control over desires, is remaining in the castle of peace within. And then goes on saying, night and day in thy joy, O Lord. If you like to chant, this is a powerful one. By the way, you have probably noticed that nowadays we are offered a lot of discounts, deals, bonuses, isn't it? Well, here is an exceptional one directly from God and Guru. If you learn to give every desire to God, He will see to it that your good desires are fulfilled and the harmful ones are overcome. That's a big bonus, isn't it? And as some of you may know, God and Guru also have a great sense of humor, and they like to play with us in their own unique way. Let me tell you a little story that illustrates this. Once upon a time, I had a desire. Here is how it came about. When I sit in front of my altar, I like to start my meditations by just looking at Guruji's picture. During that particular time, day after day, I just looked at Master's picture and I had this strong desire to see him come alive. I did not want to talk to a photograph. I wanted to talk to him. So I would say, oh Master, I want to see you move. And meditation after meditation, I repeated that. That went on for many months. Then one night I had a dream, and in the dream I was sitting right in front of my altar, and the room was exactly as it was in reality. And as I looked at Master's picture, he started to move like this. Yes, he made faces at me. I didn't know whether to laugh or cry. After all those months, that's what I got. My fault, I wasn't specific enough. I asked him to move and he moved. Well, I guess the typical Bengali playful spirit got a hold of him. So let this be a lesson for all of you. When you express your desires to God and Guru, be very specific. Let's see, another way to cultivate a joyful spirit is to strive to live in a true and authentic way. Master tells us, do away with masks. It's interesting to note that in Latin, the word mask means persona. So who is behind these masks, these personas, these human facades? It's the real you, the authentic you, minus the fears and all the human problems that cover up your beautiful soul. So what it means really to live without masks, it means to be sincere, honest, free from hypocrisy and self-seeking. It means to be one with truth and one with God. Khalil Gibran expressed this experience in a poetic way. One day, I woke from a deep sleep and found all my masks were gone. I ran maskless through the crowded streets shouting, "Thieves! Thieves! The cursed thieves!" And when I reached the marketplace, a youth standing on a housetop cried, "He's a madman." I looked up to behold him. The sun kissed my own naked face for the first time. For the first time, the sun kissed my own naked face, and my soul was inflamed with love for the sun, and I wanted my masks no more. And as in infinite trance, I cried, "Blessed, blessed are the thieves who stole my masks." Blessed indeed are the thieves who steal our masks, because that enables us to live as Guruji suggested we do, and also for the light of God to kiss our own uncovered face. Then we know what it is to be true to ourselves. As Shakespeare wrote, "This above all, to thine own self be true, and it must follow as the night the day, thou canst not then be false to any man." Guruji brought as an example Mahatma Gandhi, a beautiful example. His secretary, Mahadev Desai, said that what Gandhi thought, what he felt, what he said, and what he did were all the same. That's the epitome of living in a true and authentic way. Guruji also tells us the story when Mahatma Gandhi was invited by a British governor to go to a party. When he arrived, he was wearing his usual loincloth and a little chadar, and the servants wouldn't let him in. So Gandhi went back home, prepared the package, and sent it to the governor. When the governor opened it, he found the suit. He was puzzled and called Gandhi at his home, and he said, "What is this?" And he said, "Well, I was invited to your party, but was not sent. I was not allowed entrance because of my clothes. Therefore, I have sent my suit instead." Don't you love it? But you see, the point here is that he had a suit. He could have worn it. He didn't. He remained true to himself, to his ideals, and to multitudes in India whom he was really representing. And by the way, Gandhiji also went to King George and Queen Mary of England with his own little loincloth. I just can imagine the raised eyebrows of the properly trained royal staff. But how beautiful, how simple, how divine to be so unmasked, so true to truth, so yogi-like as to think, feel, speak, and do something always in harmony. Let's see, something else that can lead us to a greater joy is self-forgetfulness. We bring lots of troubles to us sometimes, but what we need to do is to think of God more, empty our consciousness of the little I, me, and mine, and fill it with you, Lord. Guruji relates a popular story from the Indian scriptures. Sri Krishna, knowing that his lady devotees, the gopis, were a little bit jealous of Radha, decided to teach them a lesson. And so one day he feigned to have a very, very terrible headache. And the gopis ran to him, "Lord, what can we do for you?" And he said, "Oh, if one of you would stand on my head and massage it with your feet, the headache will go away." They were horrified. They said, "Lord, we cannot do that. You are God, you are the Lord of the universe. How can we desecrate your body by touching it with our feet?" In that moment, Radha entered the scene, and she asked the same question and got the same answer, and instantly stood on Krishna's head, and his pain disappeared. And the gopis were very angry at Radha. They said, "We are going to kill you." And he said, "But why?" "Because you desecrated the Lord's body." And she said, "Well, that freed him from his headache, didn't it?" And they said, "Yes, but you are going to go to Hades for such an act." And she said, "Oh, I would be gladly live there for eternity if that made him happy for a second." See, she wasn't thinking of herself. She was thinking of her Lord. We are all at times forced to make choices. Will we be more like Radha in the future? I remember an incident that occurred during World War II. I must have been about 3 years old then. The war was raging in Europe, and my father rented a villa in the country and sent my mother, my aunt, and me to live there away from Milan and the frequent bombing. One day we heard a very loud knock on the door, and I was right behind my mother when she went to open the door, and I saw these three tall, tough men with machine guns pointed at her. So I just ran past her, I placed myself protectively in front of her, looked up at these three big men, and I said, "You leave my mother alone." They actually did. They came in, looked around, and left without saying or doing anything. Now, I didn't know I was practicing self-forgetfulness then, but I loved my mother, and I wanted to protect her. When we love someone, we don't think so much of our little self, but of the person we love, don't we? It was actually my mother who taught me to relate to the mother aspect of God. She helped me to live in her presence, to talk with her since that very young age, and to believe that she was protecting our lives. It reminds me that devotion that my mother had of something that Ananda Moy Ma once said. If with deep faith, devotion and love, you exclaim, "Mother, come, come to me. I cannot pass my days without you." Rest assured that the Universal Mother will open her arms and clasp you to her heart. She's always very, very near as the force that guides your life. Some of you may remember Swami Shamananda, the divine soul who served Guruji's work in India. Once, when he was in this country, he went up to the mountains, and when he arrived, it was quite windy. He stopped to listen to the sound of the wind passing through the trees and said, "Ah," with much devotion, "Our Divine Mother is doing her Kriya." You see, he was always thinking of Divine Mother. His mind was there and he related everything to her. What better companion can we have? Don't we want to live in the same way? We all know when love has touched our heart. We feel it in our hearts, don't we? That love, it transforms everything that we see. Then we seem to be suddenly wearing perpetual rose-colored glasses and live in an inner world of divine enchantment. We love our friends. We have chosen them. So let's choose God, our Guru, great masters, as our best friends, our closest friends, our eternal friends. They will be with us incarnation after incarnation in this life and in the beyond, ever ready to support us, ever ready to lift us up. And let's talk to them. They're very, very near. Listen to their answer, because they do answer to our souls. So another reason to be having a positive and joyful attitude is that not only God and Guru are always near, but we can trust them implicitly, totally. We can trust the love they have for us. We can trust that whatever comes into our life is for our highest good. Master once said, "God has sent you to me, and I shall never fail you." Now, he said it some time back, and he's saying to each one of you today, "God has sent you to me, and I shall never fail you." What a beautiful promise, the divine promise. And one of the last things the Lord Jesus said to his disciples was, "I am with you always, even unto the end of the world." we are loved so much we can't even begin to comprehend it. Devotion, love, this is something the divine cannot resist in whatever form we like to think of him, as mother, father, friend, guru, beloved. He loves us, the divine loves us, and wants us to live a very high life, the best life possible. A divine life that we can create ourselves. So let's just briefly recap some of the points we have talked about. First, remember Master's words. Essentially, conditions are always neutral. We color them with our attitudes and opinions, but we can do how the 92-year-old lady did. We can arrange our mind and love it. Next, have some sense of humor. Not take life too seriously. Laughter is good healing, so let's laugh more. And then watch our thoughts and see if a little editing is in order. And remember that we are already an inseparable part of joy itself. Then I think we all are intending to go on a desire reduction diet. We can discard some of the unnecessary desires and make space for joy within us. And as Master encourages us, let's try to get rid of our masks. Live more unmasked, more in a true and authentic way. And let's practice self-forgetfulness, a little less of the little I, and a little more of Thou, my Lord. Which brings us to the most important point. Realize that God loves us so much, we cannot even begin to comprehend it. And let's reciprocate that love in our lives. So let's just close our eyes for a moment. Visualize Gurudev and feel him very, very near. As you listen to the beautiful words he spoke at the end of an all-day meditation. O Divine Mother, such joy, such joy. Such pure souls are here tonight. I pray that all those who are here will never forsake Thee. Mother, we thank Thee for this day. This day is a true convocation of our souls, the cementing of our souls in Thee. Now let us repeat Guruji's ecstatic affirmation of joy. In joy I feel Thee, night and day, night and day. Ceaseless joy, O Lord, night and day. Ever new joy, night and day. All desires are given unto thee, O Lord. Night and day. Night and day. Continuously. Night and day. Thy joy, O Lord. Thy joy. Ever new joy. Night and day. Ever new joy. Night and day. Jai Guru.